Well, we're finally going to talk about your new wellness story more specifically. Along with your money story, your wellness story may have the greatest impact on the quality of your life. I thought it might be interesting for me to present the first part of the wellness teleseminar I do. This is one of the five recorded seminars and the workbook that's available to you to co-brand, if you'd like. I put together some information from research in psychology, healthcare, quantum physics, and strategic coaching to guide you to create a new wellness story. Although we'll discuss application to wellness, you'll see that the principles are fundamental to all growth, change, and success. First, a disclaimer, my mission, my hope, and my stretch goal. The disclaimer, I will not be offering advice about vitamins, supplements, how to exercise, or 1,700-calorie diets. My mission, much more fundamental, to change the way you think, specifically to be a catalyst for you to examine your wellness story, how you write it, and how you can write a new one. My hope, to guide you to look around the corner at the next years and decades of your life. What you do today can affect the quality and longevity of those tomorrows. My stretch goal, to have this time and this story make a powerful difference for you for the rest of your life. What I believe is this, that you don't need to be told again to exercise, to lose weight, or to stop smoking. And if a better diet were the answer, the 273rd new one in the last 6 months would have been enough. I want to guide you as you write your own wellness story. When you want to go someplace new, rather than give you directions, I'll teach you to read a map. I'll teach you the essentials to write and live a new wellness story, rather than tell you what you should do or ghostwrite it for you. It will be your story. It will be long-lasting and powerful when you do it. People are less likely to incorporate the stories of others into their own action agenda, even when they pay for it. Of people who go to a physician, less than 50% fill prescriptions. They don't follow the medical advice given by the physician, the expert. Of those who fill the prescriptions, less than 50% take them as directed. So even when someone consults an expert, when they're afraid and concerned about their own health, less than 1 in 4 respond to expert advice. The light on the dashboard says service engine now. Go into the dashboard and disconnect. It creates an artificial sense of satisfaction that nothing's needed. Another term, denial. It has to be your story, not the physician's story, not doctor's orders, not somebody else telling you what to do, not simply an accumulation of information. You have to have a new story to be in before you can give up an old story. This guided journey addresses the roadmap, the acronym for the 7 steps, how to recognize, own, assess, decide what to change, map changes, author new experiences, and program new identity. Wellness is a mindset. This mindset gives ownership of a life story of wellness to the individual. With this ownership comes the responsibility and privilege that each thought, feeling, experience, and behavior is created each moment. Warren Buffett used the analogy of buying a car. If you get a new car every few years, the approach would be different than if you knew from the beginning you were going to choose one car and have it for the rest of your life. You'd probably do research to know the best care for that car, probably change the oil more frequently, do everything possible for maintenance. Knowing it would be your only car for the rest of your life, you'd take meticulous care of it. Your body is the only one you'll have for the rest of your life. Your body is irreplaceable. Everything about its care and maintenance matters. It reflects the cumulative care you take of it. Wellness integrates mind, body, and spirit with a balanced flow of energy. notice the wellness system of energy in the wellness module and the curriculum. It speaks to the impact of change in a different way. Wellness is an ongoing process of choices. It's never static. We never stay at the same place. So it must consistently be assessed. It's not something that you began to plan at age 50 or 65. Rather, every choice you make each day writes your wellness story. So we're going to look at the process of change in an informed and systematic way. So, to look at a new wellness story, we're in a revolution in the science of wellness and of aging. We understand how our bodies work at the cellular level. We understand healthy aging. We can live healthier lives than anyone in all of biological time. This has taken a while because health is biologically way more complex than disease. I want to summarize some extensive research on wellness and the aging process to look at and to consider. First is decay versus growth. The story we engage with our body is one of two possibilities, decay or growth. Dr. Henry Lodge Jr., who wrote a perennially best-selling book, Younger Next Year, and its companion, Younger Next Year for Women, has devoted almost 40 years of his professional life in research of wellness in New York City. His finding, 70% of aging is not aging, but decay. If we assume that ailments and deterioration are a normal part of growing old, that we diminish activity and deteriorate physically as well as in quality of life, the change on the cellular level will be decay. Inactivity and the absence of signals to grow result in body and brain decay. The alternate story is that decay and functional aging are largely optional. This alternate story is growth. We send signals to our bodies of daily exercise, emotional meaning, good nutrition, and zest for living. And here's a quote from Lodge in Younger Next Year. Steady exercise is a coded message for your body and your mind. In 20 years, failure to exercise 6 days a week will seem as self-destructive as smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. The new wellness story includes a central storyline of exercise. No negotiations, no excuses, serious exercise. According to Dr. Lodge, after age 50, 6 days a week for the rest of your life is mandatory. 4 of those being serious aerobic exercise, 4 days a week, the rest of your life. Biologically, your body only knows 2 things, growth or decay. Blood vessels go to every millimeter of your body and each bathe cells in repair or inflammation. Exercise heals wounded blood vessels, and it's wounded blood vessels that kill you. Mortality falls with exercise. A little sidebar here. I met and collaborated with Lodge when we were both sharing a venue at a TED-like event, and we read each other's books at the time. I took that to heart, and I moved from working out 3, maybe 4 days a week to 6 days a week religiously, and it's made a significant difference. It's a significant return of investment for energy and health. Now, back to looking at a wellness story. Of over 3,000 people surveyed, 3 activities stood out above all others as ones that prompted procrastination. More than anything else, people put off these 3 things: exercise, beginning to eat nutritionally and informed, and evaluating the retirement plan. Short-term desires can trump long-term goals, and emotions can rule. On the other hand, consider this in terms of a mindset. Work duties, projects, assignments are responded to routinely and promptly. When you get up and go to work every day, you don't debate about it. You don't think yourself virtuous if you do it. You don't bargain with yourself to say, well, I'm going to knock this week off, but I'm really going to go at it hard beginning next week. This suggests that a task like exercise be treated with the same mindset as work. With work, you don't have to get up every day and debate about it, whether you will or won't. Work is there. You get up, you go to work. It's a strong organizing force, a deeply etched default mode. Whatever constitutes work, even full-time parenting, exercise can be the same mindset. Now, for some, this may be like a new job. It's a full commitment, a serious commitment, and it requires a plan just like your business, just like your work. According to Lodge, daily exercise, like work, should be right up there, trumped only by serious illness or family needs, the default story. Every day, I'm at the gym at 2 o'clock. I don't schedule times. That time is not available for scheduling. There's no debate, no consideration. It's there. It's as definite as this class has been each week, except that's year in, year out. So, now, as a coach, you're not a personal trainer, you're not a dietitian, you're not giving directives, but you can make informed recommendations, and you can listen to how your client takes information and makes choices to write the next chapter. And you're always free to challenge the choices or the trail of logic leading to them and their fulfillment. Part of the initial discussion of assessment that I do with a new client is to ask what kind of workout schedule and routine they have. Now, we've talked on this before, but I want to reiterate it here. Two things above all others create neurogenesis, the making of new cells in the brain: enriched environment and exercise. An enriched environment of intellectual and emotional stimulation creates more complex brain structure. The hippocampus is the part of the brain in the midbrain, especially connected with two things: creativity and memory. Mice from an enriched environment have a 15% increase in the number of cells in their hippocampus. Physical exercise increases the number of cells by almost 100%. There have been two fairly recent studies that are non-invasive in humans that have shown exactly the same percentages of the experience of enriched environment and exercise in humans, in University of Hamburg medical students and London taxicab drivers. Another finding: chronic stress impairs neurogenesis. The number of cells in the hippocampus decrease with stress. And again, two things primarily that the hippocampus does: creativity and memory. The Power of Story has another chapter created by studies of athletes taking human growth hormone and those taking a placebo. The group receiving a placebo believed that they were getting human growth hormone and improved at 4 fitness tests measuring strength, endurance, power, sprint capacity. In a summary of 44 studies by the Annals of Internal Medicine, they concluded that it's really the belief and the mind that improve performance, not whether someone gets a particular drug or hormone or not. In fact, medical research suggests that up to 70% of non-surgical successful treatments are the result of the patient's belief that the treatment will work. And of course, that's based on the physician or the caretaker's belief that it will work. So here are some assorted, I think, important wellness variables. One, empathy heals. Patients whose doctors show concern recover from colds faster. This is from research at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine. Patients of doctors who had empathic concern recovered more quickly than those whose physicians focused only on facts and caretaking physically. There was a direct relationship between the physician's empathy level and the patient's level of IL-8, a chemical that summons the immune system to fight toxins. Faith and spirituality heals. The capacity for faith, the belief in something larger than ourselves, can be wired into the brain through the right hemisphere. We crave a sense of coherence and purpose. Stress and heart disease can be allayed by spiritual practices. For example, those who pray regularly had a lower blood pressure than those who do not, according to research at Duke University. Johns Hopkins researchers found that attending religious services cut people's risk of death of heart disease and cancer. Other researches found that women to whom life's meaning and purpose is central had a higher number of cells that attack viruses and certain kinds of cancer cells. And finally, at Dartmouth, a predictor of survival in heart attack patients was their belief in faith and prayer. Here are a couple of studies that my wife found and forwarded to me when my granddaughter had a really malignant brain tumor. The two studies show the power of intercessory prayer, the power of people who pray for someone even though they don't know that person, and even though that person may not know that they're praying for them, it has a positive benefit in terms of cure and remission for the person to whom that's directed. And my little granddaughter is the only survivor of this particular brain tumor to date, and she just had her 2.5-year anniversary. So, psychology has traditionally studied disease, disorder, and disruption. More than 60% of adults feel that spirituality, in other words, more meaning rather than more money, would add value to their lives. Spirituality, as you know, is the basic desire to find meaning and purpose in life. Right brain and left brain, reason and spirit, form a powerful combination. The merging of spirit and health is an integration of the whole person. So, I want to talk for just a moment about the framing effect and wellness. The framing effect has significant implications in choice architecture and decision making for wellness. Let me give you a sample study of a whole number of studies that have been done in this regard. People were given free buckets of popcorn before seeing a movie, and then the results were tallied based on the post-movie weight of the remaining popcorn. Now, each person, and this was done in a broad group of studies. This was not just, you know, a dozen people. Each person was given a container so large they couldn't possibly finish it, but the results were striking. People with the largest buckets ate 53% more popcorn than people with the medium-sized buckets. The results were essentially the same in a number of situations across the country with the same conclusion. People eat more when they're given bigger proportions or a bigger container. And people were interviewed after this study. They were not aware of eating more if they had a larger size bucket. In fact, when they were told of the results, most of them denied it. They said, well, I'm good at knowing when I'm full, and things like that don't trick me. So this study showed that people don't need more knowledge or a healthier attitude about eating. Awareness of health hazards of eating don't really apply very much because they denied eating more depending on the size of the container. So since attitudes, knowledge, information, belief patterns don't really make a difference, there is one simple solution. Use smaller buckets. So think about the particular kind of unawareness combined with denial. Even when told the studies were set up in this way, they didn't believe it because they believed they acted rationally. So the implications here are fairly pervasive. If we eat based on an external point of reference, how much we're served, or if we're with one or more other people, someone else makes a decision about the quantity of food, and we go along with it. So does the restaurant decide how much you eat by the serving portions? Or when you serve yourself, do you decide on more because you're hungry before you eat? Or just because you fill your plate in an automatic behavior pattern? So the size of the container as well as the portion of the food both determine how much we eat rather than whether we're hungry or whether we make a judgment about what's in our best interest. So for anyone to change, they have to start acting differently. So let's look now at visualization of your healthy body. Have the right picture of yourself in your head. Visualization of the destination for your body and body image is as important as any other success. So the considerations for your visualization goals for your body, for example. Be certain it's your body, not somebody else's, in your vision. Have the right picture of yourself in your head, not yourself 25 years ago or in any way other than current time. Write down your ideal body weight range. Write down your plan for exercise, weight, nutrition. Write down your affirmations. This is part of looking at your true body image and getting a specific focus on that. So, a couple of other things I want to mention just in closing. Some final thoughts on storytelling, genes, and alchemy. Story is the most powerful way humans can communicate. It's been said that the secrets of great stories are the secrets of the mind, and that unlocking these secrets awakens the power of story in us. Work with that power, James Bonnet tells us, and you can steal fire from the gods. A story can transcend language, time, and culture. Our brains are wired to need and enjoy stories. And a story has both an emotional and a cognitive influence on our beliefs and decisions. Stories motivate and persuade. They appeal to our emotional capacity for empathy. This is one of the reasons that I use story as the metaphor, the organizer, to really understand and have a context for looking at the algorithms of behaviors, of attachment patterns, of emotional responses, so that we have a way to reference that and understand it as we listen to someone's story as mentor coaches, and to help them co-create a revised or a new story. Now, remember from the beginning of our first session, I suggested this, to write this question down. What's my story? To think about your story, because it makes you who you are. To summarize your plot in one sentence. To bullet your major storylines, not your bio, your title, your role, your story. Review your answers for when you did that. See what you'd revise at this point 12 weeks later. Now add this question and treat it in the same way to create an appointment with yourself just to reflect on this. What is my wellness story? Melanie Green, professor at UNC Chapel Hill, found that people who perform better on tests of empathy can become more easily transported by a story. This empathic ability to put ourselves in another's shoes means that we can discern intent, motivation, awareness, and mental states of others. It's part of the sweet spots that each of you have that you're doing this study together, that you are intuitive empaths, that you believe and use the power of story. Children develop mentalization, the theory of mind, and the ability to think about thought around age 5. Once we develop a theory of mind, we can imagine minds in others and make stories of things. Remember, if you've seen someone have an awareness, or if you remember the awareness that you had that not everybody thinks like I do. And along with that, which usually occurs around age 4 or 5, that this person has a different thought, but that also means they can't read my thought. That means I can have a secret. So there are different nodal points here that we're talking about. Once we develop a theory of mind, we can imagine minds in others and make stories of things. This means that we attribute intentions and motivation to people and to the things in the world around us, mostly that we listen for how they construct meaning and intention. Stories are a vital tool for learning as well as developing relationships. We keep tabs on people, understand them, and spread information by storytelling. A story makes a comprehensive and complete narrative for both mind and brain. The desire to create a completeness and closure by both mind and brain is embraced in a story. We practice social skills, promote social cohesion by stories. A study by Jonathan Gottschall at Washington and Jefferson College found that stories of people around the world possess universal themes that reflect a common underlying biology. The power of story is emphasized by the finding that people more readily accept ideas when their minds are in a story mode versus an analytical mindset. Now, we've talked about the wellness story from perspectives of cells, mind, brain, and story. Now a final word about genes. Epigenetics is the study of the ways in which our experiences change the ways genes operate. Our experiences program how active our genes will be. There's a difference between having a gene and that gene expressing its signature proteins to have a particular effect. Of our more than 30,000 genes, some express themselves constantly, some only at a particular time in life, some only for a certain organ of the body, some only at certain behavioral or emotional prompts. We now know that our genes and our environment, including our behavior, are reliant on each other in so many ways. What we do as well as what we eat can turn genes on or turn them off. Genes cannot operate independently of their environment, internal and external. Our nutrition, our emotions, our social interactions all interact to turn genes on and off. A simple example. When you eat broccoli, broccoli contains a form of B6 which prompts a specific enzyme to produce the amino acid L-tryptophan, which contributes to synthesize dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that, among other things, stabilizes mood. So too can current meaningful interactions. Small, caring, nurturing acts have a powerful and lasting impact throughout life. As alchemists, we help people see possibility to engage a transformative process. You are only one choice away to change your life. And I want to make a final comment about your true story. The residual outcome of your past thoughts, feelings, and actions are not who you are. What you have done with your body and eating may not be your true body self. Who you are is what you're creating this moment. You can begin to align your relationship with everything from your money to yourself by authentic conversation, internally and externally. Each of these are mindsets. Wealth, happiness, joy, scarcity, fear, worry. So, write your genuine life story, your informed wellness story. Write the truest story possible. And a final story. A small boy walked up to Walt Disney and asked him how he could be like him when he grew up. Disney took this very seriously, and he thought about it for a moment. He held up his finger to let the boy know he was thinking about it, and finally Disney said four words. Think, believe, dream, dare. So I want to do a brief epilogue before we have a discussion. Just a kind of an overview of the course with some questions. What if all you did in this course was to master effectiveness to make changes? What if all you did was to put yourself in a state that you're better at engaging people? What if all you did was to learn more about your own story? What if all you did in this course was to learn about the potential of pleasure and of avoiding pain? What if all you did was to learn to help someone be more authentic, to change beliefs into changes that last, to manage a state? What if all you did was to learn how to recognize belief systems? Or what if all you did was to learn to explore your own mind? Or to develop a greater informed sense of caring? What if you decide to seize your professional story and develop a practice and a presence of massive impact and success? To synthesize yourself to the gifts and skills you already have, the power of influence to increase the quality of your life? What if you decide to recognize that these skills can make a difference for you for the rest of your life and for each of those who you will impact in your lifetime? What if you decide to know that your ideas will not die with you or be limited to your direct contact, that you will leave your mark, your legacy? And what if you decide to acknowledge that each new decision may affect the quality of your life? If you get any of these things, and if you commit to a level of excellence to increase the quality of your life, your practice, your clients, then for me, this training has been a tremendous success. And for you, I hope this is the beginning of new possibilities. You have each shared in my passion to help extraordinary people make enduring contributions. And I feel really privileged to have spent this time with you. I hope you'll let me know in a bit how it's affected you in an ongoing way. And I thank you for the honor of learning with you. I hope I've lived into my mission to inspire and guide you to achieve your unique, most empowered life and professional stories.